SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Three, good. All right, Casey just reporting. Casey was letting me know as we were wrapping up with Dr. Alday. So the power just went out in South Florida. We haven't had a South Florida power incident in a while. Usually the violent weather. But Casey's got the backup, the battery backup. And actually the equipment that I was, we had my existing unit was being serviced in Indianapolis at Tyline. They sent me this new board, very small, compact, about the size of a Frisbee, and really good. And it includes itself has got battery power, so you don't even need to be plugged into electricity directly. And it's also got the Wi-Fi capability, but I couldn't make the Wi-Fi work. Casey and I, we tried off air a couple of times to make it happen, and that part needs maybe to be worked out a little bit more. But there's a real chance I'm going to add this new unit, which should make specifically the travel portion a little easier. So, but Casey, now the power's back on. Casey said it was only a brief outage there in South Florida. When we were in the old building, when Casey was in the old studio in Margate, that was always about every 6 months that something would corrode in the wiring outside the building, and have to get FPL and whoever else over to fix it. But good news, all right, so we're okay, because we only had about a 15-minute battery pack option there. I vamped enough so that we could get Jennifer Patterson in to visit. And I guess it was last year that word, I mean, I knew that Jennifer had been working the new barn at Fair Hill, that Stu Janney the Janney Phipps team had procured. And she was charged with handling the string down in Maryland for Shug. And that alone, even before she went out on her own, that alone was a glowing endorsement. And, of course, got to be known around the game when Orb was fashioning his exploits as the Florida Derby, Kentucky Derby winner. She was the regular exercise rider, and she's out on her own and very judicious putting out starters. But boy, when she puts them out on the racetrack, they're ready to run. And it is an absolute delight to get Jennifer Patterson with us to congratulate her on her first graded stake starter and first graded stake winner, uncontested, the General George last Saturday. Jen, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
It's got to be exciting.
It was a very good day, to say the least.
Well, and the way in which you're going about this is interesting, because you've only had 18 starters in what, about a little less than 12 calendar months?
Yeah, the first runner we had was May, I believe, we started. So, but we only have a small string, which is fine, perfectly fine. You know, starting out small is a lot easier, and, we do a lot of hands-on, so it's easier that way as well. And, we have nice horses, and it's a small string. It's even better.
Well, that part of it, we'll talk about clients and those elements, but, it didn't take long. I know that you had a winner last summer and five wins in a total of 18 starts, but give us a feel for the decision to hang a shingle and go out on your own?
Well, I mean, I'd obviously been racing for forever, really. I mean, my parents trained, and then just being an assistant for as long as I was, you know, just kind of figured, you know, why not? You know, I'd learned from some of the best, and when the opportunity kind of came around to take a few horses, figured, why not give it a try? You know, there's a couple of horses coming off a layoff, so there was real no pressure. And if it's something is what I wanted to continue to do and it was working out, great, you know, but if not, you know, it wouldn't have been something where, you know, I was going to be stuck. So, and then things just kind of fell into place and it's been going really well so far.
You mentioned your background and, of course, your father is very well known in all kinds of equine circles as a rider, a steeplechase, a trainer, and as a racing official. Growing up in Delaware, what was your first equine experience and your first acknowledgement of the kind of the world you were born into?
Well, I mean, my sister, she's 10 years older than I am. So my first pony was sat waiting in a stall pretty much before I was born. You know, and I was riding when I was 3, pretty much fox hunting when I was 5. And then mom and dad put me on my first racehorse to gallop when I was 10. And mom just said, stay behind me. And if he gets too strong, just go in a tight circle. They'll stop. You know, so just everything we went, you know, I got started at a young age. And, you know, I've loved it. You know, it's just been a part of me. Love the horses, love the racing. And you know, I started working for Ricky Hendricks when I was 17. You know, I was riding some races. And then Kathy Nielsen, she was another trainer I worked for. And I got to travel around Europe doing the Progentry amateur racing. You know, that was great, riding in Goodwood and Baden-Baden and Deauville. And, you know, just kind of trying to see all parts of it. And then went down, worked for Owen Hardy for a little bit in Florida, and then Shug, and then I was with him for, 8-9 years.
Well, and no better.
Education on all kind of different levels of it.
What prompted the transfer to get on the racetrack? I'm curious who brought you on, or when you signed on with Owen, what was the connection, or was it just enough to be, you know, and having been involved with Ricky just being, you know, crossing paths with the racetrack, and of course your father at that time was he already working as a regulator?
Yeah, he was, and it was, you know, people chasing in this country is kind of, I mean, I hate to say it, but it is. It's a dying sport, and, you know, it's tough, and, you know, I've been doing it for so long, I was still kind of, I was at home, and I just needed a change, and I had a lot of friends that were working at Palm Meadows, and, you know, they said, you should come down and do something different, and, you know, I actually really honestly only thought I was going to go down for the winter, get out of the cold, go to Florida, but, you know, there's just so much more to flat racing than there is jump racing, and I just stayed with it.
Well, when you connect with Shug, a lot of fun things, obviously, being able to put your hands on and get out in the morning on really special horses, that, you know, that goes a long way to galvanizing your interest. It's hard not to bring up Orb with you and talk about the, you know, what that winter and spring were like.
That was obviously, you know, exciting for everybody. You know, he just kept making the right steps kind of at the right time. You know, everything just went so smoothly, and that's how, you know, it really needs to go. And, you know, he had, when he broke his maiden at Aqueduct, he went down to Gulfstream, and he was training at Gulfstream, but, you know, he wasn't really handling that track the best. And I told Shug, I said, you know, he's such a beautiful mover, but, you know, this track might end up ruining him. So we sent him to Payson for the winter. And then he won another allowance. And, you know, Shug didn't want to go right into the Fountain of Youth, but there really was no other spot. You know, he went there and he ran a great race there. And, you know, he just kind of, everything just kind of fell into place. And, you know, it was a fun time, and, you know, Shug made everybody, you know, a big part of it. You know, Shug made it about everybody else in the barn, you know, which was fun. And it was a big team effort for everybody. Sorry.
Not at all. When
just pulled it. Just pulled it. Sorry.
That's all right. When you won the Florida Derby and the lead up to Kentucky, and then of course we end up with a very messy track. What was it like watching? And really, this is a question you could ask of many exercise riders that are instrumental in getting horses prepared for the biggest opportunities. And you're sharing in it as much as really any member of the team.
Yeah, the race is as messy as it was too. I don't think I watched any of it until he came by me on the stretch, which is actually very similar to Uncontested the other day. I was just pacing back and forth with my hands over my head, glancing quickly over at the screen. But Derby Day with all those horses and as muddy as it was, I had no idea where he was. So except I know around the turn he made one call, so he made a huge move around the turn. And then, I was standing on the stretch and I could see obviously where he was, and he came by us, and then he won, which I couldn't believe. But he loved an off track, but he liked it, really sloppy, because he actually really liked the turf too. So, but he never ran him on it.
Well, and some of his progeny, they're getting opportunities on grass. Just the other day too. I don't know if you saw that. I think it was on Saturday. Shug in the nightcap with an Orb Furster.
Party Now.
Yes.
Just passing out. Yeah, Party Now. Party Now actually was with me at Fair Hill for a little while. But she did really well on the turf. But yeah, Orb, we breezed him a bunch at Saratoga as a two-year-old on the turf, and he loved it. But yeah, obviously, as good as he would run on the dirt, too, it was hard to. They have so many turf horses already. They're going to use them on the dirt.
Well, the chance to open that barn and to help Shug get that beachhead in Maryland, and the fact that he trusted you to handle the string, that really was a huge endorsement. And I wasn't surprised when your name started to show up in the entries with your own horses. And you've only had the 18 starters, but you certainly have attracted some very nice owners, whether it's Mike Dubb and his familiar partners, particularly our mutual friend Harry Rosenblum. And Harry has been obviously instrumental in getting you started.
Yeah, I mean, he was the first person to send me the horses. The first two I had in our barn, they were two of his, and then through a kind of mutual friend, that's how I got some from Dubb as well, because they were all kind of at Kesmark, and I was at Keeneland, and it was a convenient spot for me to get the other horses. And Harry's been a huge supporter of our barn and giving us the horses. And we've had our ups and downs, as everyone does, but for the most part we're all a really good team. We communicate a lot and make a lot of decisions together, and it's been working out well. The first couple I ran, I know they probably weren't fit enough. So obviously, you got to kind of learn from your mistakes. So you try to make sure the next ones, they might not run, but get them as fit as possible. And it's been a lot of fun.
Well, it's a lot of fun when you win a graded stake with just the 18th starter. And in fact, you've won two straight, both with Uncontested at the end of last year, after you had been in your care for a few months. And I'm curious how much of an experience like this with a horse that came to you more or less mid-career. March, last start for Wayne Catalano was in March of last year, and he had made cameo appearances on the Derby trail the year before as a three-year-old. And how much satisfaction is there to take a horse that is in the midst of a career, as opposed to a young horse, and fine-tuning him in this case, and getting him an elusive graded stake win like this?
Well, when he came to us, obviously he had, you know, 9 months off, so he was fresh and he had time, you know, whereas before he really hadn't had that. And, you know, Asmussen had him for a little bit over the summer too, and they did a great job, you know, getting a really good base on him, you know, getting, you know, his feet back together and, you know, just, you know, sometimes he'll step on his heels a little bit, you know, little things like that. But, you know, when he came into us, you know, healthy and, you know, just ready to go, and we just didn't want to mess it up pretty much. You know, I'd seen him train, you know, when he was at Wayne's, and, you know, you can get pretty strong out on the racetrack, and, you know, I just kind of took note of things, and, you know, then we would go back, we would kind of look over his entire work tab and see how he did things, and, you know, switch things, we've just kind of changed things a little bit with him. You know, I don't really train him that hard in the morning. He does a lot of jogging. That way he doesn't stress himself out, you know, in the morning. And then we'll do, you know, longer, slower breezes kind of thing, too, instead of just all speed work, because he's fast already. So we just got to keep his, you know, the stamina and lungs full of air and him happy and healthy. That's the main thing.
The way you're talking, is he a bit of an ouchie horse, or?
Well, no. It's just not at all. He actually looks like a dressage horse when he's out in the, you know, jogging around the racetrack. He just has to just, you know, stay on top of his feet and stuff like that. But it's not a foot problem at all. It's just, you know, you have to keep his heel off the ground. Just little things like that. That's all. Just any typical horse stuff, but. I mean, he has normal shoes on. There's nothing we do, anything different than other horses in the barn.
Well, the result of the work with him, this performance in the General George, and to be fair, we should really note that the 6-furlong win at the end of December, Jen, that was his first triple-digit figure, and then you follow it up with this performance in the General George, and I'm intrigued at where you think he is and how much more, you know, there is to get from him. Obviously a grade three winner, and it feels like you've got a horse that's going to participate at a high level through the summer.
It's kind of the plan with him. You know, we have kind of picked out races here and there, and we're trying to space them out, you know, a certain amount of time in between races. You know, I think that has a lot to do with it as well. So, when he goes out and runs, as you see, he puts his heart out there. He runs as hard as he can and, take a lot out of him just because he tries so hard. And, you know, that first race, you know, he came out of that with so much confidence. So I knew, you know, going into the General George, he was going into that knowing, you know, he could do it and he was happy. And, but he came out of General George, he was tired, which he had every right to be. So now we're just kind of, he's doing great. He's been, you know, obviously back in training, but just took him a couple extra days. And, we'll kind of look in at Keeneland, the Commonwealth, you know, like the Oaklawn, Count Fleet. You know, there's been talk about the Carter. People have called from Dubai as well. But, you know, we're just going to see. We have to do what's best for him, really. And, you know, he'll let us know. And we'll see where other horses are going, too, you know, type of thing.
The General George was 7, and the allowance race that you won in December was 6. Stylistically, what's your feeling with him? Both came on the front end, but those are two different. 6 and 7 are distinctly different. Do you get a sense that seven, the pace is a little bit more comfortable typically than 3/4? What's your read? What's Tyler's read?
Harry, sometimes we all have a little bit of a different opinion about this. So Harry might be calling you. But, you know, he's just been very naturally fast horse. And, you know, just watching how he's been running, I think he really hit the horse, thrives off being a lead and just kind of doing his own thing. I think the main thing is he just don't get in his way. He knows what he's doing. He likes the way he does it. And if he just don't get in his way or mess with him, you know, I think that's the easiest for him, and he doesn't stress out about it. That's why, me personally, I think the 6 is better, because, with the 7, you know, we watched that gallop out, Lever's horse, you know, he went by us not too long after the wire. And granted, that was still only his second start after the layoff. And due to weather, we didn't have, you know, the best of breezes going into it. You know, the middle one was, he went a 103 and changed, but the track was underwater and we were being careful. So he probably wasn't fully, fully fit. And, but I'm just scared we, you know, hit another horse that can clip along like he does. You know, that might wear him down a little bit more, you know, going to seven. Or there's somebody that's a really good deep closer, you know, they might get us. It all depends. But, you know, who knows, he might come after that one now and he should be able to handle it. But Harry says, too, oh, well, he'll rate, which I'm sure he will. And, you know, I just hate to take a horse's running style away from him.
And it's funny because early in his career, he was very much a you know, on the engine type. And then as he's matured, particularly last year when Catalano was running him, he was coming from off the pace much more often. And so it does feel like there is something, you know, in there that can be switched off. I was kind of asking about Trevor McCarthy, who has ridden him in these two starts, but I said Tyler, and that's a reference, of course, to Tyler Pizarro. That's a pretty valuable barn help around the barn, I would say.
He is, actually. And luckily he can't hear you say that, but I will agree. No, he's been great, and he actually gets along great with the horse. You know, because breezing before, you know, he could get a bit keen, and but Tyler, he just doesn't mess with him. He just sits, you know, quiet on him and lets him do his thing, and the horse is just really settled. And I just think that's a big, huge thing with him, is just keeping him as relaxed as possible. Because, you know, he can be a bit sensitive, the horse, and, you know, he can get himself worked up. That's why I just, you know, Trevor, and would just kind of stay out of his way and let him do his thing. Because he's smart. He's, you know, he's a smart horse. He's competitive. He loves to run, and he loves to run fast. So that's his main thing there.
Well, having a Tyler Pizarro, who himself won, I don't know, probably close to 1,000 races in his riding career, and, you know, most notably up in Canada, and having him to, you know, get on the horses. How many are you getting on these days?
Not nearly as much as I used to. I get on the pony a lot now. I actually really enjoy watching the horses train, you know, watching them on a daily basis, you know, seeing things, and, you know, every now and then I'll get on one just to see how they feel, or, you know, if there's a filly or something. I've done all the galloping, the breezing, and it's a lot. I like watching them now. It's a lot more fun for me. And my body likes a little bit better, the back.
Sure.
So I like being on the pony. But, so I've, you know, uncontested, I've ridden him a few times here and there, but I have not breezed him, but I'm not going to get in that way. Ty does a great job with him, so I'm not going to ruin that one.
You're out at the Thoroughbred Training Center, and when I went to go look at to see where, you know, where you were working, I was a little surprised that you hadn't stayed Maryland based. What prompted the decision to base out of Kentucky?
Well, I bought a house here a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, when I was working for Vicki and Phil Oliver, that was right before I started own, I just didn't want to travel. I didn't want to go down to Florida. Just, you know, it gets old after a while, really moving all over the place. And, you know, I had the house, and Ty, yeah, he went to go to Tampa and ride races down there. But, you know, I didn't want to just go and freelance. I was talking to my dad, especially, you know, I thought it was maybe time I go and actually do something. And that's how, you know, a mutual friend between Harry and I, you know, got us talking, and Harry had two horses, you know, coming off their layoffs, and that's how that, and since I was at Keeneland, right by Keeneland, that's where I trained last winter. And then up until, you know, we had to move for the sale to Keeneland, and then I came here to the training center, which I had never been here before. And I won't admit I was a little skeptical about it, but I will say the horses love it here. They do really well here. You know, it's not a racetrack atmosphere, which I think they can settle a lot more. There's fields we can, you know, gallop them in, jog them in. They can be turned out. There's a lot of grass. You can graze them. So I actually really enjoy being here. And this track, they've done a great job this winter keeping it safe. You know, horses and training. I mean, we've had so much rain, and then when it rains, temperatures drops off. So it's been icy, and they've done a great job keeping it up for all of us to train on.
And I think I've heard that the facility's for sale, if I'm not mistaken. Can't remember
here.
Yeah,
was it there?
Maybe it was Mercury. It might have been Mercury that was
there's that one, and then there's a place that's had so many different names: Victory Haven, or Ashwood, or 505, which is another training center. Russell Cave, or something very close to here, which that's been for sale on and off for a little while.
Yeah, when I was around the time of Breeders' Cup, I heard something. I kind of referenced a little bit, Jen, for you with the existing clients and potential new clients. What about getting some babies? The 2-year-old in training sale season is upon us. Where do you stand on that? Do you want to go shopping?
Yeah, obviously we're, Harry's still, he's been looking. We were looking at, 2-year-olds, last year a little bit, and then obviously into the 3-year-old this year, and with the cumulative sales and those coming up, absolutely, we'd love to get some 2-year-olds in here and, just see what they can do. I love 2-year-olds. I love, getting horses to never run, never do anything, because, running them their first time, it either can be really good or disappointing, but getting the young blood in here, I would really enjoy doing that.
Especially
since I don't have to ride it.
There you go. Well, and what's nice is, I mean, given your track record, working, bringing up the young horses as part of Shug's team in particular, and then proving yourself with ready-made horses or horses that are coming back from whatever point in their career. So whether it's horses from a claiming standpoint and fixing them up and trying to move them up, a horse like this given to you to work with. It's obvious that your horsemanship is well on display. I mean, how actively are you looking for new clients?
I can say I'm not honestly going out there making phone calls all the time. Harry will sometimes say to me, "I should be more aggressive, same as Ty," but that's not really who I am. I just don't always feel comfortable doing that. But obviously, I'll talk to certain people and say, if you ever want to send us horses or, things like that. And so I'm not looking to get real big. So it was what we have now, and I know some of the other clients are looking to buy horses. It will fall into place. It will. And, since we stayed in Kentucky for the winter, it was cold. So, having not a full barn, it wasn't that bad because it can get really cold, and I don't really like the cold. But now coming into spring season, it would be nice. If we could just get a few more, that'd be great. That'd be great. And we have picked up a new client, and they've been looking for other horses, and I have talked to a few other people. So, it will happen.
Nice.
And especially with Uncontested now, he's definitely going to help.
Exactly. Well, one for one in 2019, and how many total are on the shed row?
We just have 7 at the moment.
Nice.
So it's me and Ty, and then there's my girl Gabby. She works for us, and actually, we just hired another little hot walker. So it's a small little team, but it's perfectly fine with us right now.
Well, and the results are certainly there. 5 for 18, picking the spots judiciously, and now with a big horse in the barn, in the first stall. Does he get the first stall now, Uncontested?
Yeah, he does. He's actually had it for almost the whole time he was here. So he's in the first stall, and then we've got the other big horse. He's just come in the other day. He's in the second stall. So Harry's other horse, a nice turf horse that Harry has. So.
Oh, the one that, the three names.
Arm for Battle.
Arm for Battle. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. When are we going to see him? We'll see him when turf racing resumes?
Yeah. April? We're hoping in May at Churchill or something, he'll be making a debut. So, but he's doing really well. And excited to get him back, too.
Well, I was looking forward to this, and I'm glad I waited so that our first conversation could be a congratulatory on the graded stake win, the General George, a return to the Mid-Atlantic for that, and Jen Patterson, continued success. You got the pedigree, and the results are speaking for themselves.
Well, thank you. You just have to listen to the horses. They'll tell you. It's the main thing right there, listening to them. That's the main thing.
Well put. And for some reason, Jen has been sneaking around on Twitter without much notice, and we're going to change that. J.S. Patterson 6.
Everyone says that I sneak around on Twitter. I do a lot of reading on Twitter, especially following everybody else, and then everyone says I do a little sneak. It's like, oh, that's great. Thanks.
Well, the fact that there wasn't one specific tweet about winning the graded stake, we got to fix that. So start following Jen at JS Patterson 6. And I know we'll talk again soon. Continued success.
Well, thank you very much.
I love it. Jen Patterson, everybody. And a lot went into, you know, getting to this point. And just only 18 starts in a little under a year, 5 wins, including the graded stake win, uncontested, and watch for the return of Armed for Battle. I mean, virtually every horse I think that she's had in the barn has won at this point. Obviously, with 7, she's putting her hands on each one every day. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, a little past it, and we'll reach out to Western Pennsylvania. Not to Punxsutawney, but to Jeremy Plonk. And Countdown to the Crown. We'll get an update from Jeremy, see what he's been impressed with here the last... we haven't talked since before Vegas. So we'll catch up with Jeremy on the last few preps and look ahead a little bit with him to the Fountain of Youth on Saturday. They'll draw it tomorrow along with that big card at Gulfstream. Back after this, JP.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at brisnet.com/pp. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at brisnet.com/APR. The brisnet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit brisnet.com for all this information and more, and discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I like digging holes and hiding things inside them. When I grow old, I hope I won't forget to find them. 'Cause I've got memories and travel like gypsies in the night.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes to fill out on this busy Tuesday. Jeremy Plonk, countdowntothecrown.com, horseplayernow.com, and we're now 8 weeks in on Countdown to the Crown, and we didn't get a chance to talk the last couple of weeks while we were on the road and in Vegas, etc., and Jeremy joins us to play catch-up a little bit. Jeremy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you. Well, you know, last week was probably the quietest weekend we've ever seen on the Triple Crown Trail. I mean, just the Mind That Bird Derby, a listed stakes race. There wasn't a lot in the maiden special and allowance ranks on Saturday and Sunday. A really nice race on Friday at Tampa Bay Downs, you know, in the allowance company. But one of the quietest weeks I can ever remember on the trail. I've been following it since the 1980s, but doing the Countdown to the Crown series in earnest, you know, 8,000-10,000 words a week for the last 14 years, and it was a quite a week as I can remember. But by that same token, over the next 12 days or so, I think we've got one of the most exciting times I recall in the 14 years, as I wrote about at ExpressBet yesterday in my free blog. Seven major horses all making their three-year-old debuts on plan anyway over the next 12 days between this Friday, Saturday, and the following Saturday. Seven serious, major, graded stakes type horses from last year, all ready to come back. I mean, this picture is going to take a lot of clarity in the next less than 2 weeks.
Well, and let's get a survey, actually, before we look ahead and catch us up on, you know, on what you were impressed with. I was on hand for the Risen Star and, you know, War of Will and also, of course, Country House chasing him home, in particular, Roland as well, not, you know, not to be completely, ignored coming out of there. Give us some feel for what you were impressed with. Galilean, of course, as well. Yesterday I talked, had a fun talk with Blaine Wright as well about his exciting horse that is going to get a dirt try. What do you think?
Yeah, another twist of fate.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some good stakes performances so far, and War of Will has put up two of them. In fact, what I think the two best stakes performances so far this year in the LeCompte and then in the Risen Star from the tough outside post. That first over style, Steve, we've talked about this almost every visit that we've had. Every Kentucky Derby going back to California Chrome is won by a first over horse, a horse who sits a length and a half off the lead, right there going down the backstretch, hitting second or third, overtakes the pace horse, goes on to victory. That's what we've seen with War of Will in the Risen Star, and I thought that was really that textbook of what we're looking for. The long stretch at Fairgrounds certainly helps. In the development, I think, of some of these horses towards Churchill Downs, it certainly doesn't hurt anything to have that kind of stamina test in the stretch at Fairgrounds. I think War of Will has done enough that you could put him at the top of your list, and I did in the past week, to say he is the top three-year-old right now because he's got two W's on the board that nobody else has in stakes company. Resume, he's got the potential to even, you know, keep getting better and better. He's only had the three starts on the dirt. He's not over-raced. You know, I just think there's a lot of upside with him still to come. But the other horses behind him now get their chance. You know, Game Winner, Instagram, Hidden Scroll, Galilean that you talked about, Signal Man makes his comeback this weekend. So it's time for the other horses to kind of announce their candidacy to catch up to War of Will. But if you have a knock on War of Will right now, I'm not sure what it would be, really. I mean, he has done it the right way. Again, he's not over-raced. He doesn't look like a horse who has peaked yet to me. Mark Cathy hasn't had a great record in the Triple Crown, obviously. You know, he had the Preakness second a couple of years ago with Classic Empire. You know, he hasn't had success in the Kentucky Derby, but he's only had 6-7 starters in the Derby. So it's not like you're talking about a guy who's 0 for life and 30-40 starts. So I have no problem at all betting Mark Cathy in the Kentucky Derby if War of Will continues with one more good prep and looks like the horse to beat with a good draw and all things considered. He could very well be the one. I don't think he's a default number one right now. I think he's earned it. And I think the others are going to have to run a little bit, or he's going to have to take a step back to take it away from him. But again, I can't wait to see some of the new horses come forth here in the next couple of weeks. I thought the runner-up Country House, Green in the Stretch, and the Risen Star that you talked about was very promising. You know, the figure guys didn't like him a ton coming out of the race at Gulfstream. Maybe it was a visual anomaly, how he swooped the field that day at Gulfstream and went on, but I kind of like my eyes more than the numbers, and so I like him quite a bit. And Country House, to me, is a top-10 type candidate. He still needs to run better, obviously. He needs to put it together. Is he the Kentucky Derby winner? No, I don't think so, you know, but I mean, it's easy to say, I don't think this horse will win the Derby. Only one will out of the entire full crop. So, you know, there's not a lot of stock to be taken in saying that. If I say I don't think Country House is the Derby winner, that's not a knock on him, because I could definitely see this horse as being a superfecta contender in the Derby with another good race and a move forward like he had in the Risen Star. I thought Limonite, who ran a middling race, fourth, fifth in the Risen Star, had a lot of traffic trouble. I think he probably would have been second or definitely would have been third in that race without the traffic trouble, multiple times where he got in trouble from the quarter pole to about the eighth pole. And, you know, he didn't gallop out like a beast afterwards or anything like that, but he got stopped pretty well. First start back for him. I think Limonite is a horse who looks a lot like Looking at Lee did a couple of years ago for Steve Asmussen, who ended up second in the Derby at 30-40-1. I think he's a horse who's a contender to hit the board in the Derby. So War of Will, Country House, Limonite, all those horses coming out of Fairgrounds, I like them so far. And what you saw at Gulfstream to this point was, you know, big upset Harvey Wallbanger. What you saw at Oaklawn, big upset Super Steed. It seems like Fairgrounds, at least in the stakes ranks, have run a couple pretty true races to form. The LeCompte result came back and was really, I think, the first, third, fourth, something like that, first, third, fifth finishers in the Risen Star came out of the LeCompte. So that race validated itself pretty well with the winner coming back and taking both of them. But I think the Fairgrounds stakes races have been the most true to form so far. But again, the big hitters are about to come out of the barn this week and next.
Well, and the one, I suppose the one proviso that continues to kind of hang over the head of the Fairgrounds lead up, Jeremy, is really the reality that it the male side has been, you know, generally unproductive. Okay, Gunrunner, you know, with his third in the Derby. But it's
no, but you got Golden Soul and Commanding Curve back to back.
Yeah,
second
yeah, seconds. That's true.
Prices.
That's true.
So they got some seconds and thirds.
There's a little
Revolutionary,
yeah, yeah.
Who was behind Orb, ran third coming out of that series. Actually, when Fairgrounds moved to a mile and an eighth, remember the Louisiana Derby was a mile and a 16th,
right?
And a mid-season prep up until about
March.
I want to say 2012, 2013. Look at the history from that point forward. And Revolutionary ran a really good third in the Derby behind Orb.
Yeah.
Those horses have been fairly productive. They've knocked on the door. They haven't kicked the door down. I agree with you. They've been, you know, they haven't gotten the big W, but they're all around it. And again, so if we're talking about horses who can run well in the Derby, right? I mean, if you're trying to identify who the Derby winner is right now, well, unless you're betting futures, it's a futile exercise that has no benefit to it. You know, you're looking for horses who can be productive and on your ticket, because when you've got 20 to evaluate come the first Saturday in May, if you can limit it down to a group of six or eight that you really prefer and then start to whittle from that six or eight, then I think you've got a reasonable handicapping exercise on your hand. If you're still thinking that there's 14, 16, 17 out of 20 that you're figuring have a shot in your ticket, then you're not going to have a ticket that's really going to be sensible to play, and you're kind of throwing it against the wall and see what sticks. So I think these Fairgrounds horses have been pretty productive since it's gone to a mile and an eighth, and it's a one step prep Louisiana Derby into the Kentucky Derby. So I'm still looking for these horses as potential plays. I think there's three right now at a fairgrounds that have a chance to be in that 6 or 7 or 8 horse consideration that I'll be looking at on Derby Day.
Well, and as to the Mark Cassie's presence, it took Cassie an extended series of tries to break through in the Queen's Plate as well. So for those that are saying, well, Cassie's in that realm that, is knocking on the door, Steve Asmussen, Dale Romans, right. They're looking for Derby wins themselves. So,
and Kenny McPeak, I think those are kind of like the four guys that we all have a lot of respect for as trainers. They've all had great accomplishments, but they haven't had the Derby yet. And I think they're kind of all in with some puncher's chances. I think Dale's probably down this year compared to what he's had over the past couple of years, but the others seem to be right there. And look, Mark Cassie, part of winning the Derby is about being able to get horses to hit the date, right? I mean, I always say the calendar doesn't lie, it's unforgiving. And what Cassie has done in the Breeders' Cup the last 3 or 4 years, I think Cassie's got 4 Breeders' Cup wins in the last 3 years, something along those lines. That shows he can hit a date. And like you said, with the Queen's Plate, that's a date. You know, it's the end of June, first weekend of July every year, and you've got to get a horse who's ready to run at that point, and now he's strung together success there. So I think Cassie has certainly shown in the last 3-4 years that he can get a horse to hit a date, and that'll be the interesting thing of War of Will. You know, was he a great LeCompte Risen Star horse, or can he hit that date yet for the first Saturday of May? It'll be very interesting to see how he runs in the next and how he moves forward. If he does, I mean, if he runs in the Louisiana Derby like he did in the Risen Star and looks that good again, how's he not one of the 3 choices going into the Derby? He may not be the favorite, because the favorite probably comes out of California or Florida, but he's right there, second, third choice, because he would have had what looks to be a pretty flawless resume through those 3 races.
Well, some of those names that we can statistically, Steve Asmussen, 0-for-19 with Derby starters. How about Mike Baker, 0-for-10? Dale is 0-for-10 with 2 thirds. And the one name that did not come up yet, and that's Bill Mott. And Mott, only 8 starters in his great Hall of Fame career. And you're talking about 34 years, only come to the Derby with 8 runners, and a lot of people, I think, are going to end up looking toward Mott the way we were looking at Shug with Orb going back.
Do you have
years
the stats right in front of you there from the media guide?
I do.
What was Charlie Whittingham's total number of starters before Ferdinand?
Ooh, let's see.
That's kind of the thought process I have with Mott and why I'm going that direction. And when Charlie won with Ferdinand, I mean, the great quote that we all remember from 1986 was, you know, I revere the Kentucky Derby as much as anybody, but I'd only come here if I thought I had a chance to win. You know, not that far off.
Well, and that comes from an era where there wasn't the proverbial Derby fever. It just
right.
wasn't. You know, he had only, let's see, Whittingham had started Gone Fishing in 58, Divine Comedy in 60. He was 8th and 9th with those 2 runners, and then it wasn't until 26 years later that he brought Ferdinand.
So Mott's not quite in that boat, but it's the same kind of thing of a veteran trainer towards the end of his career, or closer to the end of his career than the beginning. I mean, Bill Mott's certainly not in the age bracket that Charlie Whittingham was, as the Sunshine Boys won back in 86. But that same kind of idea of his life dream wasn't to keep bringing horse after horse after horse, and Bill Mott wasn't selling the dream to owners every year that we're going to get you to the Derby, we're going to get you to the Derby. I mean, Dwayne Lucas has used the Derby as a recruiting tool for the sales. He said to me in interviews in the past, the special we did with Night School on him was, the Triple Crown for him was like a sales pitch. You know, let's go to the sales. If we have success here, a good year in the Triple Crown means I'm going to have buyers at the sales for the next year, which in September, which means we're going to have horses back for next year. And it was kind of a cycle that way. And so you can see why guys who had success in the Triple Crown kept breeding more success and more success and more success with owners in those kind of races when you focus on that. But that's not hasn't been Bill Mott's MO over the years. And so, look, I mean, do I think Hidden Scroll or Country House, every bit, I think, as good as, maybe a Hofburg from last year or Court Vision from a few years back when he was in Mott's care as a dirt horse as a 3-year-old. they're in that category, you know, and those horses made it to the Derby. Hidden Scroll may be better than that. I mean, if you saw the workout, go to xbtv.com and check out the workouts and all the great Triple Crown coverage they've had. But watch Hidden Scroll work against Tacitus the other day, and a lot of people think that Tacitus, the son of Closed Hatches, is like one of the most physically talented and most promising horses of Bill Mott, and maybe a horse for the Tampa Bay Derby. Hidden Scroll embarrassed him in the workout, I thought. I mean, he blew him away in that workout. And so I think Hidden Scroll's coming in the Fountain of Youth this weekend as a horse who's ready to, you know, announce his presence as one of the ones. And wouldn't it be great for, I think, you know, at this point in his career, Bill Mott with his son Riley working with him. And, you know, there's something good. There's something about a good Derby story most years that we, you know, we cling to and we like, that strikes a chord with the general public. You know, the father-son, the passing of the torch, things like that. And Mott was the all-time leading trainer at Churchill Downs for so many years, you know, and then Dale Roman's just passed him last fall. So he doesn't have the honor as Churchill's all-time leading trainer. He hasn't won Churchill's biggest race, but now with his son working at his side, maybe he's got the right three-year-old this year. I think Hidden Scroll is fabulously talented. We don't know, you know, how great that last race was because of the sloppy track. Hopefully we get a fast track and we find out in the Fountain of Youth just what he's got on fast going against better competition. But Hidden Scroll could be the one for Mott. I think Country House is very talented. Like I said, I don't think Country House is a Derby winner, but I think he's one of those 6-8 horses that'll be very interesting by the time we get there.
Quick hits before we touch on some other runners out and about. Kind of the grab bag, but any feel on Another Twist of Fate, Super Steed, Some Like It Hot Brown, what else?
Some Like It Hot Brown, I think, is a really strong contender for the Jeff Ruby. I think the horse took well to the poly track, good rally on the inside. The horse has class, talent, tactical speed, which I think is good on synthetic surfaces. If you're going to try the dirt the next time or down the road, that you want to have some tactical speed on a synthetic, which is good for Another Twist of Fate. Again, this horse is most of the problem with the synthetic horses when they come to dirt. We remember this from our Keeneland years and a lot of the other synthetic tracks around the country is they don't like the kickback, right? And the kickback on a synthetic is a little fluffier and not as abrasive as the sand and what we get in the soil composition of a dirt racetrack. So if you're a horse who can stay up near the pace and be in the clear and avoid that kickback, you can handle the footing. It's not the footing as much sometimes as it is the kickback with these synthetic horses. So I think Another Twist of Fate speed will play well towards the main track because he's fast enough to stay up there, I think, in contention on the dirt. So it would be a matter if he's good enough, not if he handles the surface. And the question there is, would he be good enough? But he is a talent. You know, I think he could be a really good horse against, you know, mid-level three-year-olds right now. I don't know that Another Twist of Fate is going to go win, say, the Santa Anita Derby on the dirt. But let's see. I think he's going to get the chance to, though. I think the Santa Anita Derby would make the most amount of sense for him. Stay local. Give it a shot. He had the one dirt try already. That didn't go well. But he's obviously a better horse now than he was in that career debut. And I'm rooting for a horse like that. I think Another Twist of Fate's an exciting runner. I'd like to see him get to the Preakness Stakes. Of course, he's already got that win, and you're in for the Preakness. So, you know, wish them success. I've got a little soft spot for these horses who run well on synthetic over the years and hope that they do well when they get to the dirt. Who are the others that you were throwing out there?
Well, you had Super Steed upset, you know, finally put some things together after some miscues, and looks to be a little bit of a suspect running of the Southwest, but Larry Jones knows where he's going.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the Southwest horses are going to find that it's going to get much, much tougher in the Rebel, you know. You've got Galilean heading that way from California, and you got to figure Mucho Gusto or somebody like that from Baffert's Barn is probably going to end up in there. I would think that the Rebel is absolutely going to be one of those races where they're lining up to ship in for. Super Steed ran a really impressive, like, 3-furlong move. I mean, that was a whoosh move. That kind of, you know, it kind of brought me back to like a Cigar kind of move on the turn. That's like when Cigar won races, you know, like just I'm going to go 5 wide. I'm going to pass everybody in about 3/16 of a mile on the turn. And when I hit the top of the stretch, you're done. And that was the kind of race that was run. I thought Sueno ran probably the most encouraging race because he's put a couple of them together now. He was finishing up well. I thought he galloped out really well. I think Sueno can kind of be an interesting horse out of that Southwest Stakes. He's one to keep an eye on there. similar to my boy Jack was last year. Of course, my boy Jack didn't do it in the Triple Crown Series, but, you know, that kind of runner. He can be a horse. Sueno can be a horse who belongs in the 20 when it's all said and done.
Well, we've got about a minute, and we've already talked a little Hidden Scroll. So among some of the other Fountain starters anticipated, Jeremy, quite a few on your most recent list. Signal Man, you had 9th. Code of Honor, 16th. Bourbon mm-hmm. War, 18th. We'll also have Vekoma in there. And Bourbon War, yeah, I've already mentioned Bourbon War, so who am I missing? There was somebody else. No, I guess Vekoma. Yeah, that's
Dan Huffhorse, if he goes, you know.
Nah, he's not going. He's not running Saturday. No.
But, well, you know, I think Signal Man, the vibes from Kenny McPeak is we're using this as a stepping stone. If you're a gambler, it's going to be hard to bet Signal Man kind of the way it sounds. And if you look at the workout, shorter works with Signal Man. It doesn't look like he's really tightening the screws on that one. Probably a horse who's going to run a good, you know, second, third, fourth, and move forward. From a gambling standpoint, maybe you're against him. Bourbon War is a horse who's kind of has to kind of do it now. It'll be interesting to see where he draws and how the race sets up. I think he's one of the more talented undercard horses that we've seen at Gulfstream so far this meet. His 4th in the Remsen. You know, you get mixed reviews out of the Remsen so far, but some good, some bad. I think Bourbon War's going to fit in there just fine. Code of Honor's the X factor. You know, I mean, I thought he was a really good prospect coming out of last year. His first race back was so disappointing. Shug's had him working really strong for this, and he hasn't missed a beat working. It's kind of like Shug just circled, okay, we're going to get him right by the Fountain of Youth, and it seems like he's going that direction. I would expect Code of Honor to run a much improved race, or he's just not that good. He's going to tell us everything we need to know about Code of Honor come Saturday, but I think they've got to beat Hidden Scroll. I think he's going to be really tough. Vekoma's a better horse than I've given him credit for. His work against Breaking Lucky was either a case that could tell you why Breaking Lucky was going to run bad in the House Hope, which happened this weekend at a short price, or is going to tell you how good Vekoma's working, because he really made Breaking Lucky look pedestrian, I thought, in their tool workout that I saw at XBTV. So Vekoma's a horse who he's probably better than I've given him credit for so far. We'll see. I mean, if he runs well in the Fountain of Youth, you could see him jump up into the top 12 or so.
Jeremy Blanc, everybody, look for a new Countdown to the Crown, including look at the Fountain of Youth. It'll show up Friday, horseplayernow.com, and your buzz report and countdowntothecrown.com. Absolutely invaluable reading on a weekly basis, and things are getting serious from here on in. Jeremy, thanks a lot.
Take care, Steve. Good luck, everybody.
JP, Jeremy Blanc. What a fun, furious 3 hours this was, which started out that first hour with a lot of tax and legislative conversation. Alex Waldrop, thanks to Alex, and to Mike Maloney, Betting with an Edge. I'll give you guys a link to Betting with an Edge if you haven't had a chance to read it and buy it. Andy Serling, of course, Dr. Alday from Saudi Arabia. How about that? And Jen Patterson. With her maiden voyage on the show, and JP just now. Back tomorrow, Wednesday, Jack D'Amico is going to give us an update on what's going on in Georgia. They're inching. This really looks like it's going to happen in Georgia. It's very cool. At least get a chance for people to play the races. How about what else tomorrow? Catch up with Sid. He's down in Florida, but we'll have a nice conversation with Sid. Look at some pedigrees that so far have been bubbling to the surface. And what else on? What else on Wednesdays? Pete. Catch up with Pete. Didn't talk to him last week. And more. Seth. Haven't talked to Seth since Vegas. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Wednesday action, or Tuesday action out there. Limited. You know, Philly ended up canceling yesterday after we got off the air. They had those same high winds. Should have occurred. It's so windy here. Have a great day. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Visit the website for archive and more. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF.